You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
This is the time of year, of course, when it's natural to look back at the way things have been. Later this hour, we'll look at the year in sound bites, even the year in soccer. But it's also the time to look ahead. And one thing we know, the map of where Americans live is not going to look for long like it does now. According to data from the U.S. Census out today, the United States remains one of the most mobile countries in the world. From vast rural expanses to urban centers, from colder places to warmer places, and from more expensive areas to more affordable ones, and sometimes back again, Americans are simply on the move.
This is Tatiana from Lake Worth, Florida. My husband and I picked up in 2007 and moved from my home in Lake Worth to Dothan, Alabama due to a promotion with my company. After about 3 years in a high-stress job and 6 months after the birth of my son, we decided it was time to come back home. So we moved back here to Lake Worth, Florida, and it has been the best decision we have ever made.
And Florida is one of the places where America's lust for moving is most notable. All this hour, we're collecting your stories about recent moves. Have you moved towns or cities or states in the last few years? Have you opted to stay put? Give us your take at 8778-MY-TAKE. And for more now on the changing American map, we turn to Andrew Beveridge, expert on the census and sociology professor at Queens College. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Todd.
Also with us, Karen Fagans, director of programming and news at WJCT in Jacksonville, Florida, a state that's been welcoming new residents at an increasing rate over the past few years. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Well, Andrew, let me start with you. Let's go macro on the American moving map. Is this the case that I've been hearing about of sort of squeezing the balloon of the Northeast and it's kind of bulging in places like Phoenix and Florida?
Yeah, I believe that's true. That's really been going on ever since the advent of air conditioning right after World War II. And the growth pattern for domestic migrants and also for international migrants has been more and more to the southwest and to the south, to places like Florida. And this has been going on really for quite a while. There was a big blip during the late last decade, during the financial crisis, when a lot of these areas which were heavily dependent on building new construction and selling it, when the housing bubble burst, they found themselves a much slower pace of population increase and in some instances decrease. But the old pattern seems to have reemerged. And so I think that we're going to see more and more of the same sort of thing. And you know, it translates into lots of different things, including, you know, Texas picking up 4 congressional seats and New York losing 2 congressional seats after the last census came out.
And we're going to talk about that in just a few minutes here on the show. Well, why, though, is part of the question, Andrew Beveridge. I mean, sure, it's warmer, the weather's better. Air conditioning says you can now live in Phoenix or in Miami without being stifled all the time. Is that the only reason? Why do people want to live in the South?
Well, there are really 4 different factors that affect population change. They're fairly obvious, actually. One is births, one is deaths. And so if you have more births than deaths, and that often happens when you have new immigrant groups or new groups moving in, there's a likelihood that they'll have more births. And so that's one factor. Then international migration, and in the Southwest and increasingly in the South, that really means Hispanics, often Mexicans moving up from Mexico. And then the third thing is domestic migration, and a lot of that is really driven by the economy. So in other words, New York, for example, the part of New York that's actually growing, New York City metropolitan area, those areas, it's very, very crowded. I mean, it's hard to build new housing. It's hard to site new companies there. And so to some extent, it's filled. Whereas the upstate part of New York, which is actually declining in population, and upstate and the Rust Belt in general, like Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Detroit, even places like Birmingham, Alabama, there the economy is, basically is an industrial economy, and the economy is sort of undergoing decline of industrial and manufacturing jobs. The new sorts of jobs have moved south. So I think that these things all together have meant a tremendous shift of population from the Northeast, the Mid-Atlantic, to the South and the Southwest.
All right. Well, let's go to Florida then. Karen Fagans, you're there in Jacksonville at WJCT. healthcare jobs, construction jobs. Is that the case where you are, that people are moving in for the best jobs in the economy?
We do see a lot of people moving here for jobs now that the economy is picking up in the state again. And we're seeing a growth in some finance jobs in our area. We have companies like Deutsche Bank, which have, of course, a huge number of people in New York, now moving some of their mid-level jobs to places like Jacksonville because it's cheaper to be here. And it's cheaper for individuals as well, which is why a lot of the retirees end up here. We have relatively low taxes, no personal income tax, and our property taxes are also not very high.
Well, Karen, how is Florida coping with the bulge, however? Even up in the Northeast where I live, we hear about the I-4 corridor in Central Florida, how the traffic is just absolutely terrible, and how some people want high-speed rail, but that's politically fraught. How are you all coping with it?
Well, the I-4 corridor is probably one of the areas that will grow since the area around Miami is so congested. The I-4 area and then north to Jacksonville is likely to be the area that sees a lot of growth. We are getting some commuter rail in Central Florida in the spring. There is hope that there may be more federal dollars to expand that. But transportation's an obvious challenge in Florida, which has always been very car-centric. It developed mostly after the car existed, and so there's a lot of sprawl here in Florida, and that will be a challenge as the population grows.
Do people who live there already, Karen Fagans, have a sense that their community, their infrastructure is ready for the bulge, or is it getting overwhelming?
I think it depends on what part of the state you live. Northeast Florida, I think, is prepared to see a lot of growth. The concerns, one of the major concerns, is water resources for Central and Northeast Florida. There's not enough groundwater to support drinking and agricultural uses in Florida, and so there are some very controversial discussions going on right now about withdrawing water from the St. John's River for drinking and for agricultural uses. And water is going to be a major issue going forward, especially as the population continues to grow.
Andrew Beveridge, are those old cliche jokes about sitting in traffic on the Grand Central Expressway or on the 405 in L.A. going to become Florida jokes now?
Well, I think they may already have become Florida jokes. I mean, it often happens that once the growth occurs, it's much harder to deal with than you thought.
Andrew Beveridge, expert on the census and sociology professor at Queens College. We also heard from Karen Fagans, director of programming and news at WJCT in Jacksonville, Florida. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
The Takeaway is supported by Lumosity.com, the brain training program designed by neuroscientists and used by 50 million people, created to improve memory and attention. More at Lumosity.com.